America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on BBC.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset's weekly news recap. At the table, we had NBC5 Chicago reporter Christian Farr, Block Club Chicago reporter Francia Garcia Hernandez, and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Mitchell Armentrout. Well, it's the end of an era in local politics. After almost three decades in Congress, Danny Davis announced that he's not seeking re-election. So Mitch started us off by telling us about Davis and his political legacy.
I mean, Danny Davis, when you think of progressive Democratic politics, he's really been, perhaps the main face of that, you know, for the better part of the 80s and 90s in Chicago. But, you know, he's been just a huge part of the political scene here since 1979, first an alderman, then a Cook County commissioner, and then in Congress for it'll be three decades by the time he serves out this term. He's just been a real advocate in D.C. for a number of progressive civil rights causes. And, you know, it's just kind of the latest turning of the page in the Chicago area scene, as we've got several congressional seats now up for grabs next year.
Yeah. And you covered the Congressman Francia just a few weeks ago. This was when he joined other members of the Illinois delegation outside the ICE facility. Tell us what that was about.
Yes. He arrived to the Broadview facility, ICE Processing Center, after reports of inhumane conditions were made by people who were detained there and their lawyers. He arrived with three other members of Congress, and they were denied entry despite a law that states that all members of Congress have unlimited access to ICE facilities that are funded by the bills that Congress appropriates and approves, so taxpayer funds. And Davies was calling for inspections just to make sure that things are going okay inside and that these reports, whether they're true or false, need to be investigated.
Yeah, and Christian, you know, just listening to Mitch and Francia there, doesn't all of that seem in line with his reputation, this fighter for civil rights?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I've covered him over the years, and he's a wonderful person to talk to, and to see who's going to replace him is really, really interesting, because that's just some big shoes to fill, because, you know, to maintain that position for that long period of time, just like a Dick Durbin, not an easy thing to do. And so you've got your constituents behind you, and to be able to go out on top is just something amazing.
Yeah, some pretty big shoes to fill this time around, right? Let's get to that political horse race that you alluded to there, Christian. Congressman Davis, he's already made an endorsement. Let's listen.
Of all the people who say they're running for something, the only one that I know that has passed bills in the Illinois General Assembly is LaShawn Ford.
I feel like I just went to church. Took me to church. LaShawn Ford is his endorsement. Tell us a bit about Ford, Francia.
Yeah, he's a state representative for the 8th District. He's been in there since 2007. He is from the west side of Chicago, former Loretta Hospital board member who resigned after a scandal emerged there, but also very known in the west side, especially in the Austin area, for some of the reentry work he has done. Some of the laws he has supported and just really has been around, Congressman Davis for a long time. So he's somewhat of a known name on the West Side. It kind of made sense that this was his endorsement, but that doesn't mean it will be an easy race because there are plenty of other contenders.
Yeah, I remember when I first got here back in 2020, LaShawn Ford's name came up quite a bit. Like, he was just involved, it seemed, in every bill, you know, every proposal that was coming up. He was kind of like the spokesperson to get it done. So it's interesting to see him jumping into this race, Mitch, but he certainly is not alone, right?
No.
Who are the other candidates?
It's very quickly getting crowded. We've actually counted 9 candidates so far.
Oh, wow. I hope you can keep track.
Announced for the Democratic primary. One of those is City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin. Mm-hmm. She ran 2 years ago. You know, there's obviously questions. Age is really like a big hot topic when it comes to congressional seats and senators these days. And that was certainly the case a couple of years ago with Danny Davis's seat. Mm-hmm. Davis is 83 now. And, you know, he says that he's still, you know, in tip top shape, mentally speaking. And I've certainly seen no evidence to the contrary. He says, you know, he's kind of stepping aside now to usher in this new era of leadership.
Right.
But we've also seen, you know, it's going to be kind of a who's who. Former Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin is in the race.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Friedman, who's a businessman, the son of a prolific River North developer.
Right.
Forest Park Mayor Rory Hoskins. The list kind of goes on. There's also a lot of folks still thinking about it. Cam Buckner, another state rep,
yeah.
Who's run for mayor.
I noticed Anthony Driver Jr., too, the president of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability.
Right.
I'm hearing that he might jump in.
And if he does it, he hasn't officially, but, you know, he brings a lot of union backing that could be influential in a race like this. This is a district that covers most of the West Side, but stretches down to the South Loop and some of the western suburbs. And union backing could be pretty crucial in a race like this.
You mentioned State Rep Cam Buckner. I'm hearing former Alderman Walter Burnett Jr.
It's possible. He was recently named the director of the Chicago Housing Authority, which a lot of folks think that he'll probably step back from this race now that his new title. He's given up the city council dean title in favor of a city agency. But, you know, we've got another several months or so for more folks to throw their hats in the ring.
For sure.
A couple years ago, Keena Collins, she's a younger activist who was in this race. She's not announced, but wouldn't be surprised to see her
this
roll
may
it
be
back.
Her moment.
So it's kind of a free-for-all at this point.
Christian, how heavy does a Davis endorsement weigh in this case? I mean, does it make LaShawn Ford just a clear front runner?
Oh, I think it helps a great deal. I mean, I was at the same immigration press conference with Congressman Davis, and I mean, he was the headliner sort of that event.
Yeah.
Because he has so much name recognition, and he has been out in front of so many issues. You know, you heard him talk there. And LaShawn Ford, yes, a politician, but also in a way an activist as well in the community. And he's got that West Side name recognition already. So I think that helps immensely in races like this, but we're just going to have to wait and see, you know, who gets the most coverage out of this. I think that's what's going to happen in some cases as well.
Yeah, lots to keep track there in that list, Francia. Any of these potential candidates stick out to you at all?
Definitely interesting names. I think LaShawn Ford is known, and the name recognition used to play an important role. But as Mitch mentioned, Keena Collins gave Davis a scare a few years back when they were pretty close. And it was kind of a surprise for, I think, Davis's campaign to see someone come that close, someone who has not been in the political scene for that long, too. So we could be in for surprises.
Yeah. So, you know, with Davis leaving, there are now 4 open congressional seats in Illinois. Of course, that's going to just be quite the political shakeup. Davis's exit also is highlighting the issue that's getting a lot of attention here that Mitch, I think, alluded to a moment ago. I mean, we've got nearly 120 members of Congress over the age of 70. Davis is turning 84 in September. Do you think he may have stayed too long?
You know, I think, you know, just Christian and I, you know, we've all kind of covered Danny over the years. Seems like he's very much sharp and still on the ball, and you know he's asserted as much, but he acknowledged that, you know, it's kind of he didn't want to be a distraction. He said he doesn't want that to kind of go through another election cycle where that's the main question being thrust at him every day. And, you know, again, it always gets back to this idea of ushering in new leadership. Mm-hmm. You know,
fresh ideas.
Exactly. And LaShawn Ford, obviously, he is certainly younger and he's certainly energetic. You know, is he the new face that folks are looking for on the West and South sides? I don't know.
We'll
I
mean, have to wait and see.
He's been there for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a lot of people in this position. I mean, Schakowsky is another one.
That's right.
Durbin mm-hmm. is another one who are up there in age. And now they're ushering in that new sort of group that needs to come in because we see what's going on with the Democratic Party right now across the board.
Now, as we've reported before on this show, Chicago currently faces a nearly $1 billion budget deficit. Mayor Johnson's repeatedly said, I'm not raising property taxes. This week, though, he said he's considering progressive tax hikes. What do those look like, Christian?
Well, it looks like he wants to try to bring back that corporate head tax that Rahm Emanuel had pushed away.
What does that do exactly?
Well, it looks like it's asking for that $4 on employees for large corporations for each one of them to sort of
like
bring
a per head
tax. For a per head tax, it's going to bring you in, you know, $25 million that is much needed in the city because if you're not going to raise property taxes and you're trying to close a $1 billion budget gap, which, you know, some aldermen have said is more than that, and you've got two budgets, you know, looking ahead, they've got another $1 billion budget gap that they're going to be dealing with. So he's trying to find those creative ways. He's looking at digital advertising as well, not something incredibly new, but he's trying to get money from wherever he can. He's got that working group that I believe is supposed to report in next month with even more ideas to see how they can close that gap without raising property tax. But you've got a pretty big gap that you're trying to fill. And can you execute every single one of these ideas? And will every single one of these ideas bring in the money that you need to do that?
Trying to get as creative as possible to bring that money. And you mentioned that digital ad tax. So you're talking tax on ads in places like Instagram and
yes.
Facebook.
Right. And try to pull those dollars from there to see if you can close that gap even more. But again, he had a bunch of ideas on the campaign trail, and he wants to try to execute every single one of those ideas. And it's going to be very difficult to fund them when you don't have the money to do it.
Yeah. You talked about Rahm Emanuel there eliminating that corporate head tax, what, almost a decade ago?
More than a decade.
More than a decade.
2011, I
yeah,
think.
And, yeah. And his whole thing was like that it's a job killer, right? So it sounds like Mayor Johnson doesn't see it the same way.
I mean, maybe he, I think it's going to possibly, I think there's a feeling that it's possibly going to push business away. There are some people that are already frustrated with the, you know, taxes, not just in the city of Chicago, but across the state. And so they, you know, people feel like that's going to push business away. They feel
right.
like businesses are leaving the state and they want to bring more business in, although Johnson doesn't see it that way.
So your thoughts then, Mitch, on how the return of this corporate head tax could impact Johnson's support among voters?
I saw reporting in Crane's this morning that, you know, even the estimates for this corporate head tax would be like somewhere along the lines of $15 to $20 million a year, which is, you know, not insignificant, but also probably not worth the political fight that this is going to take Brandon Johnson to try and get through the city council.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the issue, the greater thing working against him at this point is that a lot of these progressive ideas require help from the General Assembly and legislators in Springfield who, you know, Johnson has just not shown any ability to create inroads there and kind of the relationships he needs to get legislation passed that's favorable to help the city out in this case. And that's where I think this becomes kind of the most, I see this being the point where the city not finally says, sure, let's light up some of those video gaming terminals that are all across the suburbs that we haven't had in the city that we've opted out of and start churning out some money that way. Because then we're talking in the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars per year, conservatively. There's concerns about taking business away from Bally's, the physical brick and mortar casino.
Right.
They obviously do not want to see that happen.
Of course not.
Because that's, you know, digging into their bottom line. But, you know, is the city's just scrambling for money here. That's really the biggest cash cow out there that is, they can make that happen pretty soon.
When your back's against the wall.
Right.
You know, the Chicago Teachers Union, which is, you know, Johnson's strongest allies, they want the corporate head tax. Is that right?
I believe so. I think it would be beneficial, but I'm not 100% certain, but I would think that they would
yeah.
Want that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are critics saying about that digital ad tax that you mentioned earlier?
The thing is, is it going to bring in enough money? And that's to Mitch's point. You know, are these things enough for you to go after? If you want to be reelected as mayor, is this going to help you in the future? And so I think, I'm assuming he, you know, wants to run again, and is hoping to serve out another term, just like Lori Lightfoot was hoping to do the same thing. But are these things going to work against him? And I think that's where the question is right now.
Yeah. Now we're going to dive into some immigration stories, folks. There's a judge who dismissed the Trump administration suit over Chicago's sanctuary policies. So explain the significance of this ruling for us, Christian.
Well, first, we have a welcoming city ordinance, which prevents the Chicago Police Department or police departments from working with the federal government when it just comes to immigration issues. So the Department of Justice had, when Trump came into office, had filed a lawsuit against the city saying, hey, we can't enforce these immigration laws that we have on the books. Because of this ordinance. And then the judge ruled against that and telling the Trump administration or the DOJ that they have to amend their lawsuit by August 22nd, or this all becomes final. And so Illinois and the city of Chicago have all both celebrated this as a victory against the Trump administration, saying that they are well within the law to be able to do this, because Illinois also has an act that protects this as well when it just comes to these immigration cases. But where this goes from here, as we know, the Trump administration does adjust. So most likely they will adjust by that deadline and do this again to see what they can do, because they've really been going after not just the city of Chicago, but welcoming cities across the country to try and enforce these immigration laws. Because this is, of course, as we know, he ran on this. And this has become a very, very big hot topic for this administration.
Yeah, Francia, civil rights and immigration rights advocates, they're also using the courts to sort of push back on what they're calling overreach by the White House. Give us some more details there.
Yes. So the ACLU of Illinois across, you know, with the ACLU nationwide and a nonprofit that defends immigrant rights, has been very active. They have filed, at least the ACLU of U, has filed 27 lawsuits so far in the Trump administration going against policies, some of them or many of them related to immigration issues, but others spanning birthright citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Funny you say they filed 27. I mean, that's in response to the hundreds.
Hundreds of policies, yes.
That he's put out since January.
Right. So they're using the courts to battle some of these decisions and some of these policies that they say either infringe on civil rights or go against just the foundation of the Constitution. It is something that one of them, I think, is important to highlight, is a violation of a court order that resulted from the first Trump administration, in which the courts ruled that ICE cannot make unlawful arrests. And this means they cannot arrest someone without a valid judicial warrant.
Right.
Or they cannot arrest someone and then go to the court and get a warrant for that arrest. But so far, in the first 10 days of the administration, about 22 people in Illinois were detained without a warrant,
yeah.
Including a U.S. citizen and including a man who is still in ICE custody.
Yeah.
So these are some of the lawsuits that they talked about.
The rules were not being followed at all.
Right. So it's what advocates said, you know, we have to keep doing this as the Trump administration is still in power and is continuing to do some of these things that go against court orders and that are infringing on other constitutional rights.
Yeah. Relatedly, organizers of Pilsen's Fiesta del Sol, they were expressing concerns this week just in fear of immigration authorities showing up. So what happens? Were there any issues when the festival did kick off last night?
Nothing reported so far. Organizers were, I think, being proactive and standing up against ICE just because DHS agents visited the National Museum of Puerto Rican Arts earlier this summer.
Mm-hmm.
DHS denies it was for immigration enforcement. They said they were just there for a meeting for a narcotics investigation, but it caused some fear and it left communities on edge. So organizers are saying our festival should not be targeted for ICE raids. These are places of celebration and mm-hmm. we will not stand for it.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about a lot of people here. When you say it caused some fear, like the festival last year had, what, a million people attend?
Over a million, 1.2 million. So.
Yeah, so if I was an organizer, I'd be worried about something like that disrupting such a crowd.
Right.
Now, President Biden was here in Chicago this week, and he spoke at the gala for the National Bar Association. Let's listen.
Judges matter. Courts matter. The law matters. And the Constitution matters. I think a lot of Americans are starting to realize that under the pressure we're under now with this guy we have a president. Oh. Get ready, folks. This is just starting.
All right. So he says judges matter, courts matter, the Constitution matters. On Monday, we saw Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson also here and having similar things to say to the nation's lawyers. They're basically urging them to, you know, stay vigilant, get ready, be willing to take on the Trump administration in the best ways you can. What do you think, Christian, about hearing the two kind of talk like this at this time?
You just wonder what, I mean, we're just at the beginning of this. This is not even, we're not even in the middle. we're at the beginning of this administration and a lot has been done. We're talking about immigration. That's one of the biggest issues. Now you have this whole Epstein thing that's going on right now. And, you know,
all these Epstein files.
Yeah, the Epstein files. Where does that all sort of fit in to all of this? So I think that President Biden's words and Ketanji Brown Jackson's words are spot on. This is just the beginning. What's going to come next? You have no idea because, you know, some people say are these distractions for other things that are going on. It's a wait and see, and it's to be prepared as well. And I think it's, you know, going the judge route and trying to fight, you know, the immigration policies and things of that nature. So I think there is concern. I think there is, you know, sort of on the Democratic side, be ready, you know.
Yeah.
You know, be ready for this change. Be ready to bring in this new wave of Democrats who may be able to bring some sort of change. What does the midterms look like? I think that's what this is all about.
And even still, we're still so far away from that. This, as you said, is
light years.
And as Biden said, this is just starting. I mean, Mitch and Francia, any thoughts of hearing this kind of talk from the justice and the former president?
Yeah, I think the audience is important here too, because you know we've seen a major tactic of the Trump administration. In a number of avenues, whether it's targeting law firms or TV networks, the strategy is, you know, you mount a major lawsuit, you threaten them with tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and then you settle. And the message from Justice Jackson and from Biden is, you know, essentially like, you don't have to negotiate sometime. Like, you can fight those. Obviously, that's, you know, a daunting choice for companies and law firms and things to make when you're staring at a crooked number like that. But I think that these folks are saying that, you know, that's kind of one major strategy is to at least try to fight them and not settle a lot of these cases.
Right. Does this kind of messaging seem appropriate, Francia?
I think it does. It also aligns with what we're seeing, especially in the immigration realm, where we're seeing people who go to immigration court and then get detained by ICE. So we're seeing even these deviations of due process within the legal system. And I think it's important that these message is coming at this time to an audience that knows the legal system, knows the bounds of the legal system, and is best prepared potentially to defend it.
Yeah, great point. Mitch, the Trump administration is trying to dig into election records as well, right? They're requesting the Illinois Election Board share data. What's this about?
They basically want all the data basically the entire voter file of Illinois for the couple of years preceding the 2024 election.
What are they looking for?
You know, I think they haven't exactly said, but I think it's pretty clearly an attempt to try and find some of the widespread, you know, voter fraud and things that President Trump has talked about for, you know, a decade now, but that there really has just been zero evidence of.
And I think we should put air quotes around voter fraud.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the idea here, reading between the lines, is, you know, looking for non-citizens who are voting, looking for, you know, folks who are dead, who are allegedly their names were used to vote, which again, have these instances popped up here and there across the country over the last few years? Yeah, but you can probably count them on a hand. We'll see exactly what the state does hand over Illinois Attorney General Kwame Arolo's office hasn't commented on this. It's just a huge amount of data, and it's obviously raised the concerns of privacy advocates and voter rights advocates as well.
Sticking with how White House actions are impacting us here locally, Francia, there's a nonprofit in Brighton Park on the southwest side that's changing its outreach strategy because of what we've talked about earlier, that the growing fears amid immigration crackdowns.
Yes, this is a Brighton Park Neighborhood Council. It's a nonprofit that directly serves thousands of residents in the Brighton Park and Southwest Side neighborhoods. And they notice less people coming into their doors. They provide an umbrella of social services for families, for asylum seekers, for residents. So they've seen numbers go down, and now they're, what they're doing is canvassing through the neighborhood, leaving information, talking to people, meeting them where they are, they say, just as a way to make sure that people are still getting services because, well, people are afraid to seek them or to show up somewhere and then fear of being detained is what they tell us.
Yeah. And last week, we talked about how several buildings in the largely Mexican neighborhood of Little Village were vandalized with swastikas. Police have now charged someone.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes. Someone was detained and has been charged after police released images of this person from video surveillance. This is Philip Dominguez. He is 38, I believe, and he is from the Little Village area. He has been charged with 5 counts of a hate crime against the buildings. He vandalized 4 buildings, including the office of a senator in the area, and 1 count for just, I believe, vandalism. So he has been charged, and he allegedly told prosecutors that he did it because he felt some sort of anger toward a Palestinian, and he supports immigration enforcement.
So those are the motivations. Interesting. Before we take a break, Christian, I'm looking at you because you covered a tragic story this week. Tragedy from many, many years ago, but it's something that's recurring here in our area. Inglewood residents on the south side, they gathered once again. They were honoring the legacy of Ryan Harris. Now, this is an 11-year-old girl who was murdered back in 1998. So you were at the park that's actually named in her honor, right?
Yes, it is. And she was raped and murdered back in 1998. And originally, a 7 and an 8-year-old boys were accused of the crime.
A 7 and 8-year-old.
7 and 8-year-old. And this made national news. I wasn't even living in Chicago when this happened, and I remember the story quite well. And then Floyd Durr, who I think was in his late 20s at the time of the crime, was the one who eventually was convicted and about 4 or 5 years ago had applied for clemency. And so Ryan Harris's family, her mother, who's still with us, her siblings, had to go there and fight this. He was denied. And last year, he died in prison. This was the 27th anniversary of her death. The park is named after her. Now a street is named in her honor as well. It just brings back some really bad memories back from that time. I mean, nationally, this was right around the time of the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Oh, right.
There was also, at the same time, was Girl X, who was also here in Chicago, who I believe was found in a project building, raped and murdered.
And I understand police were saying at the time that the boys confessed.
They did.
Later we find out that was not true.
But we know that in the 80s and the 90s that there were a lot of false confessions that happened, and there have been a lot of lawsuits with the city of Chicago, which is part of the reason why we do have a budget issue here as well, because they have to pay out these lawsuits in the millions of dollars in some cases for young men at the time who are now, 40s, 50s, 60s. Who spent decades behind bars for crimes they didn't commit, and they, were finally exonerated. This just drums back up those memories of what happened back in the 90s and the 80s in Chicago.
Yeah, the families of the two boys who were wrongfully accused, they did end up suing the city and settled for nearly $8 million. Now, according to the air quality monitoring company IQ Air, Chicago had the worst air quality in the world yesterday. Now, that is due to the smoke from Canadian wildfires. The Illinois EPA and the Department of Public Health are still warning against outdoor exercise today. Did any of you notice it?
I went to Danny Davis's press conference yesterday, and I walked outside, and I was like, it looks strangely hazy outside. Mm. And I thought maybe it was because the temperatures had dropped so much. Maybe it was like fog rolling in off the lake. But no, then sure enough, I got my Chicago public media news alert. And
we're here. We meet you where you are.
Exactly.
With all your updates. Folks were saying that there were times that you could actually smell the smoke in the air.
Yeah, I mean, this has been going on for weeks now.
And we're still blaming those Canadian wildfires,
aren't we? Say that. Did I say that?
I feel like I said that.
I did. I've actually reported on it, so weeks ago. But
yeah, let me put it back on you. You said that. That's where I got the news from.
Yes.
We got other extreme weather news. Heavy rains prompted an overflow action alert. This was on Wednesday. We were asked, I don't know if y'all remember, we were asked to delay things like bathing or running our dishwashers or washing machines. Francie, I know the south side and southwest sides, they were some of the hardest hit, as usual, by the rain. Wasn't that right this time around?
Yes. There was a storm last Friday, so a week ago, and then a storm that followed on Monday that flooded thousands of people's basements. It left, obviously, water in the roads.
Yeah.
Fallen trees, debris, all of the storm damage. But I think the most significant has been thousands of basements flooded, and obviously the damage that comes after that as people aim to rebuild. They have to throw out furniture, appliances, and in some cases, if someone lives in the basement and it's a residential unit, they're left with nowhere to live.
Yeah, the storms on Friday brought 3 inches of rain to the Midway area. Some areas of Chicago got up to 7 inches of water in 60 to 90 minutes, which that's a short amount of time. Francia, are elected officials hoping to get some help on this ongoing issue from the state or the feds?
Yes. Representative Chuy Garcia has called on the governor to declare an emergency disaster here so that they can get federal relief. Older people in several wards across the south and southwest sides have also called for this, and the city has put out a survey with the Illinois Management Agency just to kind of get a sense of how extensive this damage was and see if they can pursue other relief options. So that survey is available until Sunday, and it will help officials potentially advocate for more for more help.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, there. We also know that that's one of the many government agencies that experienced layoffs this year. Christian, you're nodding because I wonder if you heard any concerns about how those layoffs could impact what Francia just mentioned, getting help.
I mean, that's across the board. I mean, I've heard that several times that, you know, and that's in many governmental agencies as well. There have been so many layoffs that, you know, can activity happen, and how does it impact when you have a natural disaster that comes through? But I mean, I think the West Side had some flooding a couple of years ago, and they're still dealing with that, and they have not gotten the attention or the federal dollars to repair that, which comes into question. Is this a economic issue? You know, because these people, many of them live below the poverty level, and then is it a race issue as well? Mm. That comes into it, a factor as well.
Yeah. There's also the insurance process when you think about floodings. Did you hear anything from home or business owners just about navigating that process or having any difficulty?
Yes. And what I heard from some older people is that residents said they have, in some cases, they do have home insurance, but they don't have coverage for flooding. So this event would not be covered at all. So forget even about navigating the process. They don't even have coverage for it.
Yeah. And where does that leave you? Right. Yeah. Secretary of State Janulius, he's also raising concerns about rising insurance rates. And this is coming after State Farm's 27% hike to homeowners insurance rates earlier this month, I believe. What's Janulius proposing now, Mitch?
So Janulius has proposed, he's proposed basically some changes to state law that would limit how much insurance companies could factor in basically non-driving issues when they're coming up with your car insurance premium. And kind of a separate issue that a lot of other state officials have called out this week is this home insurance issue. As any homeowner in the state can tell you, their bills went up a lot back in June, somewhere to the tune of about $750 or so a year.
Yeah, mine went up.
And basically their complaint is that they don't know exactly why. State Farm basically says that it's due to the increased prevalence of flooding and natural disasters and, you know, things just kind of going very poorly in general.
So like we've got to put out so much money right now. You've got to start helping us pay for this.
More severe weather every year equals more costs that fall on them sometimes. That's fine, as far as some state officials say, except they just want to see proof that that is true. They want to see the numbers behind that. And they say that State Farm hasn't provided that data just to kind of justify the increases that folks are being asked to pay. So that's, you know, again, like just the increased prevalence of severe weather, climate change. It's really hitting folks' pocketbooks now in a very tangible way.
Christian, let's turn to something different here. There's a state investigation of Uptown's Weiss Hospital, and what it revealed was pretty disturbing. What did we learn?
Well, there's been a lot going on with the Weiss Hospital. They had an air conditioning issue, and now this emergency room issue. So they've had a makeshift emergency room, and this just happened. The investigation happened days before they lost their Medicare coverage. And so this makeshift emergency room, they, I believe, interviewed the medical director and some employees and said it's just not sufficient enough to treat patients, calling it unsafe. The Illinois Department of Public Health investigating, saying that it is not up to par.
I mean, that sounds insane. It's a makeshift emergency department in an office building.
Yes.
And it didn't have basic equipment.
Yes. And so and this hospital has had a number of issues in recent weeks. The air conditioning wasn't working on the stretch of really hot days that we had in June. And so they had to move patients around to West Suburban, which is the other hospital that they own. And if you know where Weiss is located and where West Suburban is located, they're nowhere near each other.
Mm-hmm.
One is deep on the west side, the other one on the north side, both essentially hospitals for the poor, geriatric hospitals. And the director of the hospital said that it is not unsafe, that the Department of Public Health had authorized this move, and that they are able to treat patients. But, you know, what's going to happen with the future of this hospital? We have no idea. I mean, I've got sources calling me, telling me that state reps and local reps have visited the hospital to figure out what's going on. There's supposed to be a community meeting that is coming up as well.
Oh, so this is ongoing.
So this is going to be ongoing, and this is going to be headline grabbing for a while because there are not many hospitals on the north side of Chicago. And so, you know, and people have emergencies and in some cases have to go to Evanston, go to St. Francis Hospital right over the border.
Mm.
Patients are concerned. I've gotten even phone calls from patients as well who are very concerned about the future of this hospital.
Wow. Yeah. And as you mentioned, the hospital's owner is claiming these findings aren't true. So we'll keep an eye as the story progresses. Let's turn the conversation over to the far southwest suburb of Oswego. There was a tragic car crash on Wednesday when a 50-year-old woman drove her car into a Portillo's. 14 people were injured. Unfortunately, a 2-year-old child was killed. We still don't know what caused the crash. Mitch, I'm looking at you now. You're wearing that White Sox hat, right?
Not literally.
Not literally, but it is one of your beats with the Sun-Times. One of the greatest players in Cubs history, though, Hall of Famer Ryne Sandberg, died this week. So sad news.
Ryne Sandberg, Rhino. Just one of the most popular baseball players in Chicago history. Died of prostate cancer at 65. Really tragic. This is another really sad, obviously they're all sad, but White Sox fans lost Bobby Jenks earlier this month, or I should say on 4th of July. So a tough month for Chicago baseball in general, but yeah, Sandberg, you know, he was the face of the Cubs for 15 years, 10-time All-Star. He's a Gold Glover. He was the NL MVP, got the Cubs to the playoffs back in 84 when they hadn't done that for a long time. He's really just kind of been the face of the club, even, you know, in retirement too.
Yeah.
He's an ambassador for the team. Just really beloved. And we saw a huge sort of outpouring of love for Rhino outside Wrigley this week. The Cubs are going to be wearing patches on their jerseys for the rest of the year. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more tributes to come.
Yeah, legendary, second baseman he was?
Correct.
What are your thoughts, Christian, on how Sandberg will be remembered?
Oh, I mean, I got to talk to a lot of the fans that were out there the day after they found out the news. And many of them already knew that this day was coming because he had posted that his prostate cancer had returned in December. So I think it was, for many of them, a waiting game. But it was the opportunity to celebrate not just his impact on the field. I mean, Mitch talked about this, the Sandberg game where he hit those two home runs and you know, ended that drought of going to the playoffs for nearly 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of my photographers had met him during the Cubs World Series run and in a restaurant. And he was in some Mexican restaurant, and he just ended up having a conversation with him. He said, "Hey, can we get an interview with you later?" He said, "Sure." He was just an approachable guy. I think nice. That was the other thing about him. He was just incredibly nice. And when you think of athletes and celebrities, are they approachable? Are they not? He was one of those who was very approachable, very down to earth, and appreciated, you know, his ability to just be great at the game. And I liked that I was able to find out he had a Philadelphia connection, and I'm originally from the Philadelphia area, and I had no idea. I didn't know that he was initially drafted by the Phillies
and then
went to the Cubs and then just became just this all-star, this just grand person, great ball player.
Yeah, rest in peace, Ryan Sandberg. We also have some baseball trading news, right, Mitch?
Right. It's the post-trade deadline. You know, there's this flurry of activity where contenders are trying to get more relievers and hitters to kind of push them over the line into the playoffs. And I think Cubs fans were looking for a lot more from team president Jed Hoyer here. You know, they picked up a few arms. Mike Soroka, you know, they picked up a utility infielder from Minnesota, but really not the splashy sort of bat that a lot of fans were looking for. The team could also have used a kind of a frontline starting pitcher. That didn't happen. And, you know, the Cubs say that it just didn't work out and that they're confident with who they've got. And then meanwhile, the team that I've been covering periodically, the White Sox, they flipped Adrian Hauser, who's a pitcher that they basically signed off the scrap heap in the middle of the season and got a few prospects back in return.
They got rid of him that fast?
Buy low, sell high is what they did. And I think the biggest takeaway, though, is that they did not trade Luis Robert Jr., who's kind of their de facto star player, who's, you know, he's been underwhelming performance for the potential that he's had for the last few years.
We can't have that for the Sox right now.
Exactly. But they're, you know, they're buying in with Luis and sounds like they're going to try and build around him as they try to become contenders once again.
Fingers crossed. The Cubs made it official this morning that the 2027 baseball All-Star game is coming to Wrigley Field. How big of a deal is that?
Oh, I think that's huge.
Massive.
I think that's big. I mean, when I moved here, you know, you go to Wrigley Field, the ballpark's beautiful, but everything around it was a little questionable. You go to the McDonald's that was across the street. You go to the Taco Bell.
You trying to say it was sketchy?
You bump into a couple of interesting people, but now it's just this. I mean, being out there covering the Ryan Sandberg Memorial, you just see this family-friendly area right now with Gallagher Way and families coming there with their children. And it's just, there's a certain vibrance with the hotel across the street. I mean, the Ricketts have really done something amazing to that area. So I think it's something that's pretty amazing and pretty nice to see.
Love that. You a baseball fan, Francia?
Not really.
No.
But
I am not a baseball fan either, but
you're cheering them on from a distance.
Yes, cheering them on. It's Chicago sports. We
there
love
you go.
Them.
I think it's a rite of passage. Real quick, before I let you all go, I always like to ask what stories you're watching next week. So I'll keep you in the hot seat, Francia.
I mean, immigration has been and will continue to be a hot topic, so I'm watching for that. And, you know, just over the weekend, just seeing how Fiesta del Sol goes. Obviously, yes, we heard concerns from organizers earlier this week, and it should be without problem, but we'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah, there are more days.
Yes. It's just been one day. So we have it going on from 11 a.m. through 10 p.m. today, tomorrow, and Sunday. So plenty to watch for.
Yeah. Christian?
Hoping to do a story reflecting on Chicago's violence back in the 2000s. A young man who was 4 years old. He was paralyzed and has now turned into a para-athlete. So we're hoping to sit down with him and talk with him and see what life has been like over these past more than 15 years. You know, there's a lot of stories that have happened over the years. And so to see something good come out of something so bad.
Right. Yeah, that should be an interesting one. And Mitch?
I'll be in Seattle covering the White Sox. They're obviously still in last place, pretty distant last place, but you know, they've actually played some really good baseball in the second half.
Yeah.
They've got some young players who are looking pretty promising for the future, and we'll see if they can keep it up.
Yeah, go Sox, go. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Mitch Armantrout of the Chicago Sun-Times, Christian Farr of NBC5, and Francia Garcia-Hernandez of Block Club Chicago. Have a good weekend. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Sienna Greaves. Reset brings you all the top stories of the week on Fridays for our weekly news recap. We not only bring you those stories, but context and more. Now, if this is what you're looking for, don't forget to subscribe to the pod so that you never miss another one. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.